It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
What a story, Mark.
Is finally here and let the hilarity ensue.
We got to do a remote. Of course, we got to get a money. You got to get the money to do a remote.
Well, we can do it. We can do fake remotes.
Fake remotes
tomorrow night. Yeah.
Theater of the Mind.
Well, like what we do for the public lunch thing.
Oh. Only way to give that away.
It'll be like a week later. Come to Landmark tomorrow night and watch us fake something.
Wow. Welcome, everybody. Hello, film lovers. And welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com. We are getting more and more social as the weeks go by, it seems.
We're getting more and more socialists?
Not socialist, social.
Social. Okay.
With the social media.
If you turn down Curtis a little bit, I can hear you better. I'm getting old in my own. We're getting social. We already got a bad rap as it is. Get off my lawn. That radio show, I had none of the sneak previews. No. Yes, the voice you just heard, Kobe Slagle,
yep.
who going to see him tomorrow night.
Yep.
Not tonight, but tomorrow night.
Yes.
Although, if you go to Sun King right after the show,
you can see both of us.
You see both of us. I'm trying to talk him into going to Maxine's Chicken and Waffles. We will see. We will see. We should be getting a visit from the Twilight correspondent.
Yep.
That would be Fair Sweet Bianca. She's also has a connection with the intro.
Mm-hmm.
But hanging out with us today, we have director and actor over at Beef and Boards at The Wizard of Oz. You can see him. He is Oz. Now, this is The Wizard of Oz, not the prison series.
Okay, exactly.
And who would you play on that?
Oh, no. I don't want to be in there.
But nobody does. I don't think so. But Eddie Curry is here. Hey, Eddie.
Hi, Matt. Good to see you.
Thank you for coming back. This is a big one because one of the first guests we ever had in the history of film sociology was you and your lovely wife.
Get out of town.
We were
really?
Still. Yeah, we were
and
still.
You're still on the air?
Wow.
Man. No, I meant because after my appearance.
Oh, no.
I thought I shut you down, maybe.
No, you were fine.
No,
yeah,
I've
somehow
heard your program. It's pretty good.
it's a real show.
It's
terrific.
Let's play that for her. We just played Curtis Mayfield.
Hang on.
But, and of course, now, I see you saying that. Besides having Eddie Curry here to talk about The Wizard of Oz, which is going on right now. Well, not now, but, you know, in the
tonight.
Time sense.
We'll
tonight.
Do it tonight. Yeah.
But I also have an exclusive chat with Top Chef Judge and Carl's Jr. spokeswoman Padma Lakshmi.
Carl's Jr. / Hardee's, depending on what side of the Mississippi you're on.
Yeah, but I think it was originally done for Carl's Jr. And, of course, I don't know. Who cares? I get to talk to Padma. And you're jealous.
No, nobody. Yeah, you're right. Nobody cares about that first part.
Why don't you shut up? Why don't you shut up and play the
first,
ID that we were just talking about?
Elmore Leonard.
One of our best favorite IDs is from author Elmore Leonard, and he had this wonderful thing to say about this program.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's not.
We are here. This is real.
This is real. So I think
it's not a figment of your imagination.
So I think Eddie's just added on to the sound montage in review.
That's pretty good.
Excellent. Well, I'm in good company at least there. Yeah.
At least he's not in bad company.
Right.
See, that's the second bad company reference that WFYI is made in 1 month in the history of its existence. I think so. It's true. But anyway,
both by you.
Go figure. That's right. Bad company references on radio and TV. That's right. Take that, rock radio. You don't have television. We do. All right. Let's talk about what is opening today. I'll make reference to some of the other films that are opening. First off, we have the British art film Hysteria. which and I checked with
that's not a Def Leppard documentary, is it?
It is not a Def Leppard documentary, and no, yeah, we'll be talking about Rock of Ages in a minute. But this is the one with Hugh Dancy, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jonathan Pryce, Felicity Jones, and I checked with Standard and Practices. So long as I am proper when I say this is a film that's about the some British doctors that create the first vibrator. There. That's really what the story is. So now, gentlemen, if you want to see a film with Maggie Gyllenhaal and an electronic device, I'm not sure if this is the one that you have in mind. Go rent Secretary. we also have Something from Nothing, which is a documentary about the history, the rise of hip-hop in the 90s. And also, it was screened on Thursday night, which is just a step below, not a step above, not screening it for the press at all, but the latest film from Adam Sandler and Andy
There was a screening
Sandberg.
A couple weeks ago for that.
Really?
Yeah. Was
Did you
going,
go?
Was going to go, but couldn't get the passes.
Couldn't get the pass?
They were all taken.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to see it.
Really?
Yes, I do.
See Andy Sandberg's post SNL career.
Well,
do
I
something.
Mean, it's I mean, like Happy People. I loved Happy People. It's Adam Sandler and it's R, so it might be, and it's not.
I mean,
it's not Adam
people.
Sandler. Yeah. Did I say Happy People?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's
happy, shiny people holding hands.
Yeah.
Sucker.
Funny people.
Funny
but
people.
It's not, you know, him chasing Kevin James around.
I got a feeling it's going to be more in that category
yeah.
as opposed to actually having a director like Paul Thomas Anderson or mm-hmm. Judd Apatow. So anyway, that's out there. But I want to start with Rock of Ages because it's based on a hit musical and it's the mashup of rock music and metal from the 80s. And apparently I just read this on the interwebs on Facebook, and apparently it is such a slow day for news that Glenn Beck is now going after Glee.
Oh,
as
geez.
Far as I'm like, really, that's your target? You want to give the president and the Democratic Party a break, so you're just going to go after Glee? You know what? It's kind of low hanging fruit. But anyway, this has, man, Tom Cruise and Alec Baldwin and Julianne Hough and, I'm going to say it. He's going to wince. Russell Brand is in this as well. Russell Brand, for those who don't know, Russell
Just
Brand
is
also on Kobe's list. We can't say what kind of list it is, but he's on the list. You're on the list. So, and it features a lot of music from the late 80s. So here's the preview. Enjoy.
This place is about to become a sea of sweat, ear-shattering music, and puke. Jimmy, I've told you 10,000 times, girls drink free, dudes pay full freight.
They are dudes.
That stage is a pedestal, and when you're up there, you're untouchable.
I can guarantee you something a lot more cool. Fame.
This man spews out three things. Sex.
I saw Stacey Jacks.
Hateful music.
Club is totally out of control.
We're gonna shut them down.
Our whole existence is riding on Stacey Jacks.
Rock and roll!
We're not gonna tell it straight. No, we ain't gonna tell it straight. We're not gonna take it anymore.
This is the greatest night of my life!
Ladies and gentlemen, the icon of rock, the legendary Stacey Jacks.
Oh my God, I love you, Stacey Jacks.
Cruise right there, singing that?
Cruise does sing in the film.
Yeah.
Everybody sings. Everybody. Yes, even Paul Giamatti, even Alec Baldwin, even Kobe's not favorite, Russell Brand. All right. Now, I just saw this afternoon. I didn't get a chance to go to the screening. So I have to start my review with and put a little side note on this, is saying this is really tapping into my teenage years. I was 17 in 1987, and I was listening to a lot of this music at that time. So with that, obviously, I think everybody takes a critic's review with a grain of salt, but I'm handing you the grain of salt. So take that for what it is. It's a frustrating film to watch because of my emotional connection with this music at that time. I can reassure those who are younger than me that on the Sunset Strip in 1987, nobody was playing Journey, Starship, Foreigner, or REO Speedwagon.
Not even close.
No. So, but I understand that is part of the mashup. That is part of the term, and I didn't come up with it, but I like using it, Celebrity Oki. I think Celebrity Oki really came in after the film version of Mamma Mia, where the women fared better, far better vocally than the men. And everybody sings in this one. I have some of the other people, the voices you heard, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Mary J. Blige. Okay, Bryan Cranston, he's in it, but he doesn't really sing. But he's in it as well. It's a good cast. I mean, it's a good cast of people.
So many names.
It is, yeah. So many names. And I think part of it is they wanted to, one, if they had any musical ambitions, they wanted to do it. One, it's a huge, very popular Broadway play, and it's from the director of Hairspray, which did really, really well. Also, the fact that I also am accepting the fact that this is a clean, sanitized version of the Sunset Strip in the late 80s, even though there is a Catherine Zeta-Jones gets to play Tipper Gore. Let's not mince words. That's who she's playing, basically. Except it's 1987 and it's three years after the whole congressional meetings. But so the fact that the music, I was like, somebody who was listening to Twisted Sister or Def Leppard or any of the other music at that time was not listening to Night Ranger. Well, maybe, but they were not listening to Starship. They were not listening to REO Speedwagon or Foreigner. And if they did, they would blame their girlfriends for making them listen to it for the power ballads. Speaking of girlfriends, hi, Bianca.
Hello.
Now, see, I worked at a radio station during this time period, and it was one of those radio stations. In Terre Haute, of all places.
Well, you know what? That music's still being played in Terre Haute, so
right.
Hasn't really changed. So the fact that the music choices I have an issue with, and this is also a music nerd that knows this. Also, a thing that really grinds me is if your movie is set in 1987, I don't want to hear music from 1988, 1989.
No.
I don't. And
continuity error.
Big continuity error. There's a scene,
and an easy one to avoid, I would think.
You know, there was so much long-haired guitar rock and metal that was done in the 80s. You couldn't get the rights for something that matched.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where the guy and the girl, it's Julianne Hough, who, of course, is very fun to look at, and Diego Boneta, who I have to check and see if I've seen any of his work. But they're at a Tower Records, and I hear I Remember You from Skid Row, which didn't come out until 1989. Now, granted, they might be grinding up and down the strip in 1987, but things like that really bug me. And I can hear Richard Miles throwing a wrench at me because there was a film that came out. It reminded me of a film that came out called Pirate Radio, which we aired here as part of the British Telly Club summer film series. And that film is set in 1966. So it frustrated me there that there were songs from 67, 68. So that really got in the way of me really enjoying this as much as well. And I enjoyed a little bit. This film had little moments.
What I'm hearing is you would like to replace all the music in this and just do a musical based on Moving Pictures by Rush.
Aren't we developing that already? And yes, and of course, at this time, everybody was trying to do a screenplay adaptation of Queensryche's album Operation Mindcrime, because that's a concept album. Now, I will say a couple of nice things about the film. One, it is the backstage drama. This is a type of light, frothy musical where, yeah, boy and girl meet and really fall for each other really fast. This is also the backstage musical where you get a job in a 2-minute scene. You get your band to open, to be the opening act in one scene, by the end of the scene. That happens. It's 42nd Street, that's all the way down the line. Vocally, everybody's fine. Like I said, the men don't get to sing a whole lot in this. I mean, Alec Baldwin and you're not your favorite. They do a duet, and they do, I don't want to give it away, but they do bring up an aspect of hard rock and heavy metal. Well, let's just say I think Rob Halford would appreciate it. I thought, well, at least they've finally addressed that little thing. Even Paul Giamatti gets a couple of lines of song, but not a whole musical number. I think the best vocalist that fares out in this is Tom Cruise.
Oh no!
I know everybody's favorite Scientologist, because he plays Stacy. He plays the big rock star, and he's got the drunk, incoherent rock god down to a science.
His extensions alone are enough to keep me away from that.
You know what? There were, I think Dee Snider had hair extensions too. So, yeah. You know, the fact that, and his character is supposed to have had hits in the 70s and it's still 1987 and he's just, big. Hanging on. So, and say what you will about him as a human being, because I have, but any role he does, he really just dives into it, whether it's running down a building in Dubai in Mission Impossible. I mean, he really jumped at this. I also think he personally by hand dug the pit where Katie Holmes stays now in the basement of the Cruise home.
So I agree.
But he turns out to be probably the nicest surprise of the film. So I guess if you're not a fan, I don't know if you're not a fan of Loud Rock, if you're going to go see this, but if you don't have problems with continuity like I do, I guess you'll like this more than me. Fine, but I'm going to be the one that tells you that song is not made in that year, and that really bothers me. And they weren't listening to that, because if you listen to Night Ranger in a nightclub in 1987 on Sunset Strip, they would throw bottles at you. That's just plain and simple. Sorry, that's
it. Don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Hi, Bianca.
Hello, Matt.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay.
Am I even on right now?
Yes, you are on right now.
Oh, okay.
The whole I'm speaking to you should have been a giveaway that you're on.
I couldn't hear myself. I wasn't sure.
But we hear you, dear. So it's good
to
have you.
That's all that matters.
Say yes, Kobe.
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear.
I've taught him well. All right, let's move on to something else that opened, finally. I think it was only out a week before we got it, but it's the latest film from Wes Anderson, and it's called Moonrise Kingdom, with two kids you've not seen before and some familiar actors that you have seen before in other Wes Anderson films.
What kind of bird are you?
I'm a sparrow. She's a dove.
No. I said,
oh, hi, Matt.
What kind of bird are you?
That's okay.
Dear Susie, here's my plan.
Okay.
Dear Sam, my answer is yes. Dear Susie, one. Dear Sam, where? Dear Susie, walk 400 yards due north from your house to the dirt path which has not got any name on it. Turn right and follow to the end. I will meet you in the meadow.
Who's missing?
Shukuski, you in there?
Jiminy Cricket, he flew the coop.
Walt, where the hell are you?
Right here.
Does it concern you that your daughter has just run away from home?
That's a loaded question.
Until help arrives, I'm deputizing the little guy, the skinny one, and the boy with the patch on his eye to come with me in the station wagon.
C'est le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains, et de l'aventure.
What am I looking at?
He does watercolors, mostly landscapes, but a few nudes.
If we find him, I'm not going to be the one who forgot to bring a weapon.
Me neither.
Thank you.
Where's the boy?
I'm told that he's just been struck by lightning.
It's true.
I'll be out back. I'm going to find a tree to chop down.
Okay, so of course Wes Anderson is the gentleman that gave us Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums, Darjeeling Limited, Fantastic Mr. Fox, not Unlimited, shut up, Kobe, and Bottle Rocket. And obviously Mr. Anderson has his own style of filmmaking. Some would say quirky, probably not Zooey Deschanel quirky, but quirky nonetheless. Here comes Kobe.
Is this the guy that we were talking with Stacy and she's like, yeah, give me one of his movies. I just need a minute.
I think it's some of like Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap. He basically challenged hipsters to debunk his negative review of this film. I like it. I like Wes Anderson. I think he gets a lot of jokes visually. I think with the composition of his camera work. And this time around, he's dealing with first love. We have two unknown child actors, Jared Gilman and Kara Hayward, who play the couple. He escapes from his Boy Scout troop. She leaves her home, and they run away together. And then it's the adults who really are grown big kids at brain and at heart. Frances McDormand, Bill Murray, Edward Norton, Bruce Willis. A really strong cast. All of them are very funny in their own way. It's dry humor. If you've seen any of the films, I think Wes Anderson's become a more polarizing filmmaker. I don't know anybody that really finds him mediocre. People either really like his stuff and they really don't. And I happen to fall into the camp that I really like his stuff. And the fact that it's a different look at first love. It's not a Disney relationship. It's not a TV relationship. It's just dry and at times awkward, but usually your first love is. So nothing wrong with that at all. And the fact that this is his follow-up to Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is a big hit in the Soucy household. So, I will be the kids' film correspondent has inquired about watching this film. So it'll happen. But enjoyed it. Go check it out.
Yes! Yes!
Okay, got a couple other film notes. Tonight at the IMA, if you don't have plans, and it's okay, there's plenty to choose from if you're not going to Beef and Boards. But part of the summer cinema series going on outside at the IMA. What are they showing tonight, Kobe?
Tonight, IMA 9:30, Father of the Bride.
The original, not the Steve Martin version that's really necessary.
Yes, 1950.
Spencer Tracy and Elizabeth Taylor. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. And do we have the special trailer? Because
oh, yes,
airing tonight and tomorrow night at midnight at Landmark Cinemas at Keystone on the north side, the Tommy Wiseau epic, The Room. And it's another excuse for me to play this.
Dreams collapsing.
Damn, it hits you.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
Oh, hi, Mark. You know what they say, love is blind.
Yeah, there you go. So, we're, of course, big fans of The Room. Last week's Film Sociology, you heard, once again, my famous interview with director, actor, writer, and star, Tommy Wiseau. So, that's going to be a lot of fun. I am probably going to be there both nights. I know Kobe and Fair Sweet Bianca are going to be there Saturday night.
Yep.
And Fair Sweet Bianca, the other reason why we brought you in, one, because it's been a while, and I'd love to see you. But two, Kobe finally inflicted this film on you.
Inflicted is a good word.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. And I'm ready to trash talk this movie.
Well, why? What's wrong with it?
What isn't wrong with it is really, I mean, and I will say, because Kobe, I think he said this before, I was misinformed. I thought that it was actually going to be a good movie. As some people say, it's good in a bad way or whatever, but I really didn't understand that it really is just horrible.
That's right. It's impressive how bad this is.
I guess it can be. I was impressed at how horrible it was. I found some... I didn't want to just say what I thought about it. I did do some internet searching and found what people have written about it. And
did you go to Rotten Tomatoes?
No, actually, I found movie reviews off of Amazon.
I see.
So what some people have written about the movie and that sort of thing.
Did you go to filmsociology.tumblr.org? Is that it?
.com.
Shut up. I'm sorry, go on. Sorry, no, we're over here. Talk.
I wanted to share a couple, only because I think they're kind of funny.
Okay.
Okay. Well, first, the best bad movie ever.
That's possible.
This film is hilarious and for all the wrong reasons.
Definite.
Yep.
I find that the movie makes more sense to me if I imagine that the character of Johnny is actually mentally challenged, but everyone is too polite to say this explicitly.
Or from New Orleans. Right, go on.
See the room and be transformed into another consciousness that never knew how people behave or talk or think. A fever dream in which situations arise and disappear without leaving a trace. Where leading men can look like shambling corpses a few weeks old. Where the meaning of roses and chocolates have become perverse symbols of love. Where perversion is normal and where normal is perversion.
Correct. So what's the problem? What's your point?
What?
She was genuinely shocked that I asked
really?
That.
Really?
But the fact is, and this is a debate on, I guess, how you feel. Andy, I'll have you chime in. This is being debated upon the so bad it's good. You know, sounds like it's in the same category as, say, the films of Ed Wood or Robot Monster or stuff that, you know, either Spanguli or Sammy Terry would show. I say, what's your attitude on the so bad it's good or fun bad?
I avoid it.
Okay, all right. Okay.
I avoid the bad it's good thing. I don't know how you land there. I think you land there by accident and you're lucky. How many bad movies are bad and they're just bad?
Well, I own several, but I think, well, and like with my buddy Laura, who someday will work on the book, we always get together and we watch bad movies before the Chicago Blues Festival. And purposefully, because this
they
is what
come
we,
out of the bad movie box.
They do come out of the bad movie box, known as my film collection.
So what was the last bad one?
I will tell you. This year we watched. Well, the opening act was we got through about 20 minutes of The Conqueror. This was the film that starred John Wayne as Genghis Khan. Yeah. Susan Hayward was in this. A young but not thin Robert Conrad.
Oh.
William Conrad, okay. For you Cannon fans. Lee Van Cleef is in it. And they shot it in Utah. And it's the one where everybody in the film is dead because this is where they did some of the nuclear testing in Utah, which so looks like Mongolia.
Yeah.
So much so. Just like John Wayne looks just like Genghis Khan. So we got through about 20 minutes of that. And then our headliner this year was the 1970 masterpiece Myra Breckinridge, which was based on a Gore Vidal novel. And it is Rex Reed, yes, film critic Rex Reed, in I think his only movie role, who gets a sex change and turns into Raquel Welch.
Oh, my.
And if that wasn't enough, and then she's going to inflict revenge on a schoolmaster played by John Huston. This was also one of the first films of Tom Selleck, Farrah Fawcett, and the cinematic return after being out of the movies for 23 years, who sings two musical numbers, Mae West.
Wow.
Yes, this film is as messed up as it sounds.
Oh, man.
So I think you should watch that now that you've handled the room. So,
I feel like after that, there really isn't anything that you can't, like, that's too much.
You can't sit through?
Well, there's a moment with Rex Reed, which I won't get into because I'm in mixed company and it's a family show. But there's been two moments in the history of Laura and I watching movies together where she's actually physically hurt me. One was the when a couple are fighting, and then of course by the end of the scene they're making love and they forgive each other. Well, it was when that happened between Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand in A Star Is Born. She kicked me. There's a scene with Rex Reed thinking about Farrah Fawcett, and she hit me in the arm. So, and of course, Laura says about The Room, anytime Johnny laughs, I want to punch him in the face. Oh. And then I want to punch. And then she said, then I want to punch you in the face for making me watch this.
The laugh is just creepy, and it's like, ugh.
And I'm sure the first two of three really long sex scenes in the first 30 minutes probably gave you the willies.
Oh, just the music. It was just horrible. Johnny's face. It was just like. Oh my God! Like, I don't even know how to describe it. I just sat there and I kept staring at Kobe and I was like, really?
You didn't answer, right? You never answer during the feature.
He's like, oh, just.
I was singing the songs at that point.
Oh, that's even better. Yeah. I can't do that.
People do that at the thing.
They do that at the thing, which you can see tonight or tomorrow night at midnight at Landmark Cinemas Keystone at the Crossing.
I am so excited.
And you just can't hide it.
Yep.
Gotta bring your spoons.
You know.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep.
All right. Let's take a short break now that she's riled up. And we'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. And we'll get through a couple of celebrity obits. And we'll talk with Bianca and Eddie Curry and Kobe. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Anything about either one of them.
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org. You're right over there. If you have a question or a comment,
still gets me every time.
Wesley Willis?
Yep.
I know. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. Cracking up, man. All right. Ferris Wheat Bianca's hanging out with us. Eddie Curry from Beef and Boards. We went a little long, so I'm gonna go plow through the movie, the DVD titles, which is really okay because we have lots to chat about. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week is there are two sequels. I don't know who asked. Well, one of which I can see why it's made. The other one, I think I know why it was made. First, the big title this week is Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, which reteams up Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. And this time around, Sherlock Holmes' arch nemesis, Professor Moriarty, suitably underplayed by Jared Harris, is along in this. The original girl with the dragon tattoo picks up where Rachel McAdams left off as the token girl, and Stephen Fry's in this. And actually, you get to see more of Stephen Fry than anybody really needs to see. And it's, of course, directed by Guy Ritchie, who's no longer married to Madonna, and the world is a better place for that. It's kind of the same of the original, where we know it's not your grandfather Sherlock Holmes. It's not Basil Rathbone. A lot of slam bang effects, a lot of jump cuts. Not quite as irritating as Michael Bay, you darn kids and your ADD editing. But it does have a different villain and new characters added into the fold. But I think the main reason why we see this, besides the action sequences, is the relationship between Holmes and Watson, which I still stand by, is a lot like His Girl Friday. In this one, Dr. Watson is about ready to get married, but Holmes has a new case and cannot do anything without his Rosalind Russell. So that's what the film is. And the charm of these two guys is what makes this film worth watching. I'm not sure if I'm ready for a third, although, you know, I bet they're willing and able, yeah, if willing.
It's coming.
You know this.
Well, I don't know.
Mr. E Entertainment. Have you been talking to Cat Sadler without me?
I talked to Robert last week, and he said, you know, it's...
Irvine? Redford? No? Smith?
I'm Matt Sosie, and I have Robert Irvine's number.
I also have his ID, too. You got that one, too?
Yeah, I got that one.
All right.
We lead the league in show IDs.
We do lead the league in show IDs. Classic Radio's got nothing on us. So anyway, it's definitely worth a rental. I don't know about pushing your luck for a third, but who am I to say? So,
now that was a good movie.
Yeah, it was. Also, in the continuing saga to pay off his debt from bad management, Nicolas Cage has a new film on DVD and Blu-ray, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
He's the only one that can walk on both sides. That's what he says in the first one.
Oh, gosh, you're quoting the first film.
Seriously.
Wow. Well, he's back as the title role, and this time he's got to find a soul of a young boy to save, and if he saves him, then he gets his soul back, and or he can ride the earth like Kane in Kung Fu, but on a motorcycle. And Kieran Hines shows up, and he's twitchy and probably got a lot of money for being all twitchy.
It's dumb.
This is a sequel to a film that's 5 years old. That's never really stopped anybody.
Is that really?
Yeah, it's been 2007. And it's from the two-man directing team that gave us the Crank series, and it does have that feel. But you know what? Despite that, it's not crazy enough for me. If Nicolas Cage is going to do a ridiculous action film, it's got to be like Drive Angry in 3D, or the Werner Herzog version of Bad Lieutenant. It's got to be just completely over the top, bat spit crazy, and this one just doesn't quite do it.
Bat spit crazy.
You can say that. Can't say the other. Bat spit.
It's awful.
Two.
I don't even know what else to say. It's just awful. Don't be bothered by it.
Okay. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, one of the films that was up for Best Foreign Film from Poland called In Darkness. Not a date film, but still a very powerful Holocaust drama about a group of Poles that live in the sewers for a long period of time and their contact with the outside world. So that's also out. Criterion has three films worth checking out, whether you can rent them. I recommend buying them because I already have two. One is the thriller Shallow Grave, which was the first film of note for Danny Boyle and also introduced a lot of people to a young actor named Ewan McGregor. There's also Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush. Yes, that's the one where he eats the shoe. Always good physical comedy. Excellent film. And in a special place in my heart, and I watched it yesterday to revisit, the first dark comedy my father ever showed me, 1971's Harold and Maude.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yes. Bud Cort, Ruth Gordon, easily one of the best movie couples of all time. Definitely the best movie couple of 1971.
I wanted my first car to be a hearse. After watching that movie, I thought that was coming up on license time, and I thought,
did you bring that up to your folks?
Oh Lord, no.
Now, for those who know, it's directed by Hal Ashby, who gave us the last detail being there. Bud Cort is a young man who's obsessed with death. In fact, he's obsessed with it so much that he does these elaborate fake suicide attempts to try to get any rise out of his mother, played by Vivian Pickles. And along the way, he meets an 80-year-old Holocaust survivor, played by Ruth Gordon, who loves life, embraces life, and they're able to learn off of one another. Now, it's a dark comedy, which means, of course, that we get to laugh at things that you're not supposed to laugh at, like suicide attempts or turning a jaguar
into a hearse,
yeah. Stealing cars, and eventually a relationship between, yes, a person in their 20s and a person in their 80s. Now, before people get the willies, let's not forget there was also Entrapment, which had a really old guy with a really young girl, but this is flipped and this was first. This was the first film my dad ever bought on Betamax.
Really?
Back in the late 70s. 70s were a different time, right, Kobe?
That was BC.
Shut up. So I might have to inflict Harold and Maude on you guys. But it is a sweet film.
It's a good movie.
Not just about embracing life, but it really does break the barriers on what love is. And it's very, very touching. Excellent soundtrack by Cat Stevens. And I to this day thank my dad for introducing me to dark comedy at a fairly young age, which explains a lot with members of my family.
When I was younger, people said that I resembled Bud Cort. And now when I look at Bud Cort, I'm like, oh, man, I hope that resemblance is not there any longer because he has not aged well.
He is not. But I think at that time, and also he got typecast really fast because his first two, he had a small part in MASH, but he was the star in Robert Altman's Brewster McCloud, where it's a guy who wanted to fly and create wings and fly inside the Houston Astrodome, and then followed it up with Harold and Maude, and he kind of got the shaft of being typecast as the young oddball. And I know he's obviously still working and doing, you know, older characters now, but was not your conventional leading man, another plus in the 70s. And nothing wrong with that. But, you know, at the very least, you got Harold and Maude under your belt, and that's really cool. So, all right, before we talk with Eddie Curry and we talk with Fair Sweet Bianca, one of the things about this job is occasionally you have opportunities to interview. Well, I interview all sorts of people at all sorts of times, but this one just fell upon my lap, the concept, not the actual interviewee. That would be awesome. Tell me it's there. Tell me you have Padma chat.
Hold on.
It should be in the film sociology file. I love
it. Well, I pulled something out and I thought it was that, but it's not.
There's
that,
Padma
apparently.
Chat and there's Padma ID.
All right.
Is it there?
Hang on.
Are you sure?
Here we are. Yes, I've got it.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, I got to recently talk with Top Chef Judge and chef and spokesmodel and model, and she's done a lot of TV. And, of course, guys know her for the Carl's Jr. / Hardee's article with commercial with the barbecue bacon cheeseburger. Here's my chat with Padma Lakshmi.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Padma. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging here in Indianapolis.
I'm good. We're just we're sitting here drinking up some coffee. Very happy, jittery people.
Well, that's good to know. When it comes to summer, what is the first dish that you think of?
Well, you know, I think there's nothing so classic in summer as ice cream. And I'm going to show you how to dress up ice cream and make it into a fabulous dessert and give your guests a coffee all rolled into one. And the recipe is so easy, but if you don't write it down, it's on Nespresso.com. Basically, Nespresso makes these great espresso machines. Their coffee machines are renowned all over the world. And they basically have a Pixie machine, which is the one I love. It comes in a lot of colors. You pop the little capsule of coffee in. It's the best possible coffee. You make the espresso. You just take a beautiful, simple scoop of vanilla ice cream, put it in a coffee cup, pour the espresso hot over it, sprinkle some chocolate chips, and drizzle some caramel sauce. That is it. You could add nuts. You could add cinnamon. You know, you could add peanut butter chips. But that's the basic recipe. And again, if your listeners are driving or whatever, it's on the website. Go to Nespresso.com.
Sounds like a good movie treat as well.
It's awesome, honestly. They have this beautiful milk machine called the Arachino, And it's basically you just plug it in and it steams up the milk and gives you that foam, just like those high-end coffee bars all across Italy and Switzerland and France. It foams everything up. It steams the milk in 1 second. It's beautiful. Actually, probably about 30 seconds. But it's so easy to do.
Well, can you tell us a little bit of what's in store for season 10 of Top Chef?
Well, we haven't filmed it yet, so there's not much I can tell you. We're in pre-production right now. I think we're just all racking our brains and figuring out how we're going to top Texas from last season. I mean, we had such an incredible, incredible season, and we're just gearing to shoot. It'll probably be on the fall, and I think we're trying to shake it up again. I think you'll see a lot of surprises. I mean, you know, Charlize Theron and Patti LaBelle were on last season, so who knows who they'll come up with this season.
Padma, we can top Texas, Indianapolis.
Sounds good to me.
So I was curious, when you see somebody cooking in a movie, do you pay extra special attention to see if they're actually doing it right?
You know, that's a great question. I do, actually. I'm a big freak about continuity because, you know, I come from theater and I've done a couple of movies, and so I can always tell when there's not continuity or when someone's phoning it in. And, like, you know that scene in Jerry Maguire where Renee Zellweger answers the door? Watch it. When they cut to his view, her necklace is tied differently.
Ah, yes. So movie-wise, who can cook?
You know what? Stanley Tucci can cook his face off. That is not, he is not playing. Everything in Big Night is very authentic.
Great
so
film.
So can Martin Scorsese. His first student film was a film about his mom's spaghetti sauce. He gave me a copy of it. It's brilliant.
And didn't she do all the cooking in that one kitchen scene in Goodfellas?
Yes. That's an incredible scene.
So anytime we're going to see you in a movie anytime soon?
I have a couple offers, but my problem is my scheduling. You know, mm-hmm. You have to really do one thing and do it well. I haven't been in a movie since I started Top Chef 5 years ago. My last film was for the BBC. I would love to do another film. It just has to be the right one and work with the schedule, which is not always easy. I'm just thankful for my job on Top Chef at this point.
Of course. Padma, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care, Matthew.
All right, you too.
Hi, this is Padma Lakshmi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI FM radio.
It's the little things that make this show great. Yeah, I'm glowing, so what of it?
Speaking of Goodfellas, you brought up Goodfellas. You're going to hear Fresh Air right after this, and there's going to be a talk with talking about Henry Hill, who was the inspiration for the film Goodfellas and the novel Wise Guy, who died this past week. Nicholas Pileggi did the book Wise Guys, which later adapted into Goodfellas. Also, we were talking off the air, but character actress Anne Rutherford died recently at the age of 94. One of the sisters in Gone with the Wind, and played in a dozen of the Andy Hardy movies as the girl next door, as Polly Benedict. She did six of those in 1939 alone.
Oh, wow. They cranked them out.
They did crank those out there. So there were 16 Andy Hardy movies. And anybody know who she replaced? Anyone? Anyone? For you trivia buffs out there? That would be Margaret Marquis. So, Eddie was on the tip of your tongue, right?
It was to come out of my mouth.
Yeah,
Margaret Marquis.
Right, that one. So anyway, and then
color Marge.
Yeah, she also appeared in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty back in 1947, The Adventures of Don Juan in 48. And for you 70s film fans, because the 70s were a different time, Kobe, the James Garner thriller They Only Killed Her Masters, and her last film from 1976, One Ton Ton, The Dog That Saved Hollywood. I remember seeing that. And Frank Cady died this past week, who was on Green Acres.
Yeah, Mr. Drucker.
That's right, Mr. Drucker. And I also, so this is, since this is a film show, I thought, I always love it when TV actors, and you try to see what films they appeared in, you're like, wow, really? And it may, will hopefully make you go and check it out. He was in the Kirk Douglas film Ace in the Hole in 1951, When Worlds Collide in 1951, played Henry Diagle in The Bad Seed, the Patty McCormick version, Seven Faces of Dr. Lau, Million Dollar Duck, and in 1975, the Jeff Bridges film, Hearts of the West. Yes, Film Sociology, your home for Hollywood obits. Eddie Curry, how are you?
Great, man. I need to go see a movie now.
Well,
I wish I might, you know, I have you to know see what? If I can get a babysitter and go see The Room tonight.
We'd love to have you there. So, because you guys get done at what, 10:30, 10:15?
Yeah, show comes down about 10:15. Yeah.
Eddie Curry is the director and one of the actors in Beef and Board's production of The Wizard of Oz, which is running through July 15th. Now, yeah. Full disclosure, this play also happens to feature my lovely wife and my lovely daughter. Yes, the Paltrows are finally working together. Emma is a member of the Lollipop Guild, and she's a flying monkey. She's the smallest of the flying monkeys, as I found out. And for the second time in her career, my wife is green.
She is green. But, you know, back to Emma, she does one of the most important technical moves in the show.
Which is?
Well, she helps Dorothy get on her ruby red slippers without the audience even noticing it.
It's Emma Soce
who orchestrates that entire moment. Without it, the show comes to a screeching halt.
Does she become equity for that?
Well, we'll have to go back into negotiations for that.
Oh, trust me, you try negotiating with her 24/7. Good luck.
Well, so, and she's losing teeth left and right for.
Yeah, she's
out loud.
My daughter's lost two teeth.
Yeah, she's every lost, night I'm dude, hearing, oh, the but, munchkin lost
but,
a tooth again.
But due to candy, not because of you're not Julie Taymor. This isn't no. Spider-Man.
Well, and so. I guess I was responsible for one of the teeth because
you gave her candy.
I gave her Tootsie Rolls, which were to represent. Droppings that Toto might leave on opening night.
Oh, because you see Tootsie Rolls look a lot like.
Yeah.
And there's
a
dog.
And I left three of them because she's regular. She drops in threes. I'm just saying. A little behind the scenes stuff about Toto.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not the band.
But Emma doesn't drop on stage, and she's very
God,
good.
No, don't give her any ideas.
She's very good, and she executes that shoe change like a pro. I'm telling you, it's like she's done this before.
She has. It's her second time.
Of course, your wife is like, she's done this before.
She has done this before. Because the first time was, I always tell people, the first time she played the Wicked Witch was the summer that three of my favorite women in the entire world played witches. Michelle Pfeiffer in Stardust, Susan Sarandon in Enchanted, and my wife. So,
and of course, this is the reworked script that the Royal Shakespeare Company did
right
in London, and so it's got a little bit more of a camp feel to it. And
we the nickname around Lynn's around the house with Lynn is Witchy Poo. So
there you
go,
a little bit,
but
no, she's really embraced that little comedic flair that this particular witch has, which makes the character a bit more palatable for the kids that come to see the show. She's great.
I was about to say, because we were joking earlier, you guys had an appearance today at the children's hospital.
Man,
and
so much
somehow
fun.
My wife didn't show up. I didn't want to give anybody a heart attack.
No, I made the executive decision that Wicked Witches aren't allowed at Riley Hospital.
They're not insured.
No.
So.
Pre-existing
Glinda
conditions. Glinda was there most definitely because Glinda is played by Trisha Shepherd, who used to be on WRTV6.
I was just...
Yeah.
See?
And she now works for the Riley Foundation. Now, that's not why she's Glinda the Good Witch.
That's just good timing.
I had... she had been in other shows for us, but yeah, that's she's in there.
Now, because this is a film that... a story that everybody knows, and since... is this your first time directing Oz itself, or
no? This is my second time directing it, and the third time I've actually done it over the last 20 years.
So I guess what was different from the first time you directed this, and what do you try to avoid that's in the film? I know you mentioned the tone of the Wicked Witch is one, but were there other things that you tried to dodge so it wasn't a recreation, or are there moments that you're like, it has to be done?
You know, I don't obsess with trying to recreate the film, but we certainly don't want to depart too far away from it either.
It's Wicked.
Yeah, and then it's something else. I saw a production, I'm not going to name the theater, but I saw a production of The Wizard of Oz in Chicago, and they bent over backwards to not be the movie, and there were these three old ladies sitting behind me at an intermission. She said, well, that's not The Wizard of Oz. So I try to avoid that.
Right.
You know, so it's very close to the movie, but I also embrace the refreshed script that they did in the late 80s to kind of update it a little bit and do that. So we're pretty close to the movie.
I hope you include Somewhere Over the Rainbow at least.
No,
that
song is...
Yeah. It's screw that noise.
It's overdone. It's overdone, and
I think they mash it up with Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas from Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh,
so.
Of course, yeah, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, definitely in there. And beautifully,
but, you know what,
beautifully performed by Lisa Bark, who is our Dorothy.
Who,
you have to say Dorothy, because... because it's D-O-R-O-T-H-Y. Dorothy. It's not Dorothy. It's Dorothy.
Why? Do people who like Italian dressing on their salads say that?
Well, you know what?
Or do they wash their clothes?
You know what? Here's something interesting. When I order French dressing, I often end up with ranch. So in Indiana, when I order French, I have to say French.
No, you have to say you have to say freedom dressing because some folks can't freedom let go.
Well,
so
there you go.
Wow. Now, and of course, you're also in it. You are the almighty Oz.
I am the great and powerful.
Oh, I'm sorry. Great and powerful.
Great and
it's
powerful
on his business card.
Oz. That's right. I am. Sorry. And my little dog plays Toto. So that moment works really well in the show when Toto has to discover the wizard because she's just got mad love for me. So she comes over and discovers me. And everybody thinks she's really smart and trained. And
how do you direct a dog? Do you put treats everywhere?
Everywhere. Yeah. There are treats everywhere.
On body parts?
No, that doesn't even really work, I don't think. But I'm standing off stage when she escapes from the witch, so she comes running down the stairs right to me. And then when she needs to go back out on stage, I just toss a treat, and she runs out for it, and there she is. You can't see the treat being tossed.
No, you can't.
It's just a little trick. She's a dumb dog. She's not trained at all.
Is she equity?
She is.
Okay.
Yeah. And making big...
big bucks. She and Emma can also negotiate in their contracts. Eddie, don't worry, because when Kobe heard that Eddie Curry was going to be here, he was going to talk about your rebounding. So
you know what? I get his Twitter hate. I do.
Wow.
I get that guy's Twitter hate. It really irritates me.
Do you respond going, I'm not even a photo negative?
No,
but
I do. I always say, you need to check the spelling. I'm an IE, he's a Y. And then I get, God. I'm sorry, but he's the one that, and then it goes nasty after
that. Wow. Man. I'm going to follow both of you now on Twitter. Holy cow. That's great.
Yeah, I get it. Twitter hate.
Did anybody talk about the time he sat on a medicine ball and destroyed it?
No, did he do that?
Yeah, he broke a medicine ball.
Oh, jeez. No, they were just talking about colorful things that he does for Dwayne Wade after the games. And I won't go any further than that.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that. Well, you might see something
It's not me. No. I don't even know Dwayne Wade.
And it's okay that you don't.
No, I'm too short.
Hey, Spud Webb won his slam dunk title. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's true.
And Dudley Moore dated Susan Anton. That's even better.
Yeah.
So for more information, where can people go to get tickets?
Call the box office. Can I give that number?
Absolutely.
All right. It's 872-9664. Mm-hmm. And we're on stage through July 15th. A bunch of local kids playing the Munchkins. And it's a decidedly local cast. So
Very
it features some of the best musical theater talent that we have in Indianapolis. And you can also go to our website and see some reviews and pictures. And that's Beef and Boards, andboards.com.
And I bet it's done by a very fantastic and beautiful photographer.
Oh, my. Yeah. The photos at Beef and Boards are. Are you engaged, Colby and...
Not yet.
No. Well, if you need a wedding photographer, my wife, JulieCurryPhotography.com, just look her up. I'm just saying, you know.
No pressure. No. But we got to watch the room first.
Well,
so.
and then there's the pre-engagement pictures. Keep that in mind. Well, we were talking future father-in-law. I'm sorry. She has turned like 5 shades of red.
She always does whenever I ask her on the show.
I can't hide my emotions, unfortunately.
That's all right. That's okay.
That's right. We like that. So,
I've been looking at Colby here for the last hour, and you could do much worse.
Wow.
You could. You could. I'm just saying. He's a nice-looking guy for the radio world out there. They're going to be... They're going to come to Beef and Boards for their anniversary because Beef and Boards is the place to celebrate.
You guys do that.
That's
right.
Do
that a lot. So what's the rest of the season? What's the rest of the year?
Coming up, very funny production of Nonsense.
Yes. You also see a gorgeous nun in that show as well.
The last 2 weeks, if
That's
you come,
right, last
she replaces
2 weeks.
Lynn Perkins will be the mother superior.
I'm calling her Sister Raquel.
And then a sizzling hot production of Chicago. I get to play Amos. Mr.
Cellophane.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Looking forward to that. And then, of course, the Church Basement Ladies are back right before Christmas for Away in the Basement, a Church Basement Ladies Christmas. Just dumb fun.
Cool. Speaking of dumb fun, it's about time to wrap up film sociology over here. Eddie, thank you so much for hanging out. Fair
and
sweet
I kind of feel like a matchmaker today.
Great. You're Jane Austen's Emma. Do you have some words to live by?
I do.
Here it is.
Silent breed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
Okay, go see a good movie. Go see some local theater. You deserve it. Hope to see you at The Room tonight and tomorrow night at Landmark Cinemas Keystone at midnight. I know I'll see you guys there.
Yep. We will be
You're
there.
Listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We go!
Let's get some beer and...
Good night.